Hey everybody, Jim Duncan with Nest Realty. This week on Sweat the Details, Jonathan, Keith, and I talked with Brian Buero of 1000 Watt. We talked about the proposed NAR settlement and the fantastic opportunities that this new era brings to agents, brokers, and real estate consumers. We're now in an era where articulated value, empathy, defining risk mitigation, and so much more matter more than ever. We hope you enjoy this conversation, and we'd love to hear your comments and your thoughts.
Hey, welcome to Sweat the Details. We're in the spring now and things are warming up, and we're super excited to have Brian Buero with 1000 Watt with us. Brian, welcome to the show.
Jonathan, thank you. I'm really excited to talk with you.
Yeah, definitely. I'm here with Keith Davis and Jim Duncan with Nest. Brian, tell me real quick, maybe give a quick background who you are and tell us a little about 1000 Watt.
Sure. I have been around real estate, residential real estate, for 27 years, believe it or not. I started when I was just a very young person right out of college. I've never sold real estate. I've never run a real estate brokerage, but I've been around the world of residential real estate and media and technology and marketing, and I love it. I'm 27 years in. I never get bored. I love this business. And 1000 Watt, which we started about 16 years ago, we do strategy and creative work in real estate exclusively for real estate brokerages, prop tech companies, franchise brands, mortgage companies. And what that means basically is we help companies figure out what's unique and worthy and valuable about them, and then help them express that out in the world.
Great. And I'll tell you, so, you know, we've been, and our 1000 Watt clients have had an amazing experience with you. I think I probably told you the story before, but, you know, 15 and a half years ago, I think you and Mark had just started 1000 Watt, and there was, I don't know where I saw it, but you posted, it was probably on your website. I probably found it through some sort of blog. This was pre-social media days, that you did a top 10 things to do on your real estate website or something like that. I remember that. And I will tell you, like, I found it, printed it off. We were in the process of building our very first website at the time and slapped it down literally in front of our developers in South Carolina, Charleston, South Carolina. And we use it as a, you know, as a little bit of a roadmap for putting our site together. And I remember one of the, you know, there was some great advice in there, but one of the points was call it what it is. And that back in the day, there was like, if you save search, it was like the real estate shopping cart. And like, you know, there's all these different names for how you save it. And you're like, just call it save search.
Right? Pretty much. Yes. It just use the word that describes it best. So yeah, I do remember that. And look, I think without flattering you too much, I think, you know, what you've built at Nest is something we've always admired, and you still have a great web presence. So you've definitely sort of led the pack on that stuff.
Thanks. Well, I appreciate it. So anyways, you've been influencing us since day one. So we're once again glad you're here. Clearly there's a lot happening in the real estate world right now. And I think that, you know, it goes without saying that we're all, you know, pretty darn busy. And I'm sure you've been just, you know, inundated with projects and some of those we want to touch on today. But, you know, we'll acknowledge that, you know, the proposed settlement with NAR, we're not going to dive into all the details. There's probably 950 other podcasts and different places online and we can go, and what, you know, what the rules are and what happened and who's in the $2 billion club and who's not, and like things like that. So we won't get into that. What I would like to kind of kick the conversation off with is that, gosh, we're about a month. The proposed settlement came public about a month ago. And really what happened after that was people freaked out, people in the industry freaked out. And then within a couple of days, there was just this inundation of media coverage, which, you know, you can, I'll just come out and say it. It was, you know, maybe a lot of inaccuracies in the media. And then that cycle happened for a couple of weeks. And then the last couple of weeks, things have started to calm down a little bit. And I'll tell you, like, I've been listening to a lot of podcasts and watching a lot of webinars and doing a lot of reading. And the one thing that has surprised me a little bit, coming from all these industry information is that our industry, our community, is seemingly coming out right now and saying almost across the board, it's not a big deal. Nothing's going to change. You know, it's a, you know, the settlements, there's just a different way to get from point A to point B than we got previously. I, you know, I'm not necessarily a hair on fire guy, but I'm also not necessarily like the world is not going to change. I'd love to, you know, get your overall thoughts about things aren't going to change much, you know, based on what you're seeing and hearing and the research that you're doing. What are your thoughts on that?
Sure. I'm not a hair on fire person either, but I do think that the initial response from those of us inside the industry, particularly those who run real estate organizations, has been, I think, a little bit over-optimistic. And I think part of that has to do with sort of needing to have a brave face for your people. So if things get weird and people freak out and real estate agents are scared, then what leaders need to do is to make people feel more confident and secure and tell them that it's going to be okay. So I think a lot of the noise you heard within the industry from real estate leaders was simply that. It was reassuring, brave face, speaking to their agents, which is fine. That's what they should be doing. I think that it would be dangerous to take that line of thinking and use it to guide your go-forward strategy. And what I mean by that is maybe it turns out to be a big nothing burger. Maybe nothing really changes, but it would be A, hazardous to make that assumption, and B, you'd kind of be missing a big opportunity if you just kind of assume that things were just going to work themselves out and people would go on to worry about other things and we're just going to handle compensation outside of the MLS and blah. So long story short, maybe the people who say nothing's going to change are right, but it's not a good idea to just operate on that assumption, in my view.
Yep.
Brian, I mean, I agree with that and I echo it. I think that right now, one, none of us really know what's going to happen in 6, 9, 18 months. I think that the way I'm looking at it, I think we're looking at it, is this is an opportunity to better ourselves at what we do, become better at every aspect of what we do, whether it's representation of clients, internal communication, external communication to other agents and consumers, and use this as an opportunity to build and grow. Because even if we're sort of similar in a year and a half, or we're wildly different, the product in a lot of ways is still the realtor to consumer representation, and then the broker to agent conversation, and that sort of representation. Where do you see opportunities for I'll say external communication, mm-hmm. for brokerages, agents to consumers to talk about what it is that we're doing and what we do on a daily basis?
Sure. Well, the way I think about that, Jim, is part of the opportunity here. Part of what drives us nuts, those of us who are inside this business, is, as you suggested, Jonathan, some kind of kooky stuff that we see in the media about this. Okay. It burns us. We disagree with it. We don't like it. But all that negative media coverage has done something that I think is could be viewed as an opportunity. It has ignited people's awareness of the real estate industry in a way that simply hasn't happened before. So as Americans, we like to think about real estate, talk about real estate, obsess about real estate. We love real estate, but we don't really think about the real estate business and the industry. And what has happened in the last month is all of a sudden, a significant number of Americans have become aware of the real estate industry in a way that they hadn't before. And we don't know what that's going to do, which way that's going to go in terms of consumer sentiment. But if you know that that's happened, the opportunity, Jim, to your question, is to speak to that. If you know that there's something in your in your customer's mind or your prospect's mind. Speak to it. Don't cower, you know, hide and hope that they forget about it. Speak to it. Right. So what that means, you know, if you're a solo practitioner, a broker, a giant brand, is to speak to this moment and say, listen, you may have heard a bunch of things about X, Y, and Z, or maybe you've been thinking about, I want to buy a house and should I buy hire a real estate agent to help me do that? Here's what a real estate agent who helps you buy a house does. And what is, here's what their real value is. And here's how they get paid. And here's why that's a good value. So to speak about that explicitly and lead with that, I think is the opportunity. There's such an opportunity for thought leadership here, whether you're in the neighborhood or you're speaking, you know, to millions of people because you're a national brand. The opportunity is the same.
So Brian, let me further that. I mean, I'm sitting here thinking about every PR crisis that has occurred over, you know, the last century when corporations jump on things and industries jump on it, and trying to figure out how we're any different from that. And I think the question I'd love to know is there a difference between the leadership that brokerages need to be managing in terms of communicating with their agents and with their vendors and with their partners versus the way that agents need to be managing the discussion directly with consumers? Like, is it just at the brokerage level, is it just preparation for that final end user discussion, or is there something different that needs to be taking place at the brokerage level?
I think it should sort of be telegraphed ideally from the brokerage to the agent, to the end user, right? And to have that strong story communicated all the way through. What has happened thus far, Keith, you know, over the last few months, and particularly over the last few weeks, is inside of real estate, the legal discussion has sort of led here, right?
Sure.
As it should have, right? If you're talking to a group of real estate agents, you have to teach them, well, now, you know, in cases where you didn't have to use it before, you need to get this, you know, buyer representation form signed. You're going to need to do all this messy negotiation stuff, maybe if this settlement or something like it gets approved. And that's great. We've had the legal discussion. We needed to have it. We need to continue to have it. But what I don't see happening a lot is the framing, positioning, and messaging discussion. Like, that's where I think we need to go now, is how do you tell your agents how to articulate their value in a way that's not defensive, by the way, which I think is interesting, which is an important point.
Sorry. Yeah. No, I agree with that. And we've been, to this point, we've been putting out, you know, almost like, I'd say a combination of scripts, talking points, data, and some of the data we put out, you know, could be seen as defensive, and we've, you know, asterisked it and said, don't lead with this, have this right in your pocket. If somebody, you know, questions one of your comments, but if you lead with, you know, you're going to get sued if you don't hire an agent, right? And I'm exaggerating. That's not a great value or a sales pitch.
Yeah. No,
I mean, I think going back to the opportunity here, it's something that, and, you know, Jonathan, Keith and I were talking a little bit ago, and I've been doing this for 20 some odd years as well. You know, I think that for much of my career, it's been a function of exuding confidence and competence to the customer or the client, and not always doing the best job of articulating what's happening in the transaction and what's happening throughout the process of from meeting the person to, you know, closing on the house. There are, I won't say infinite, but there's a lot of steps in there that's real, hard, legitimate human work.
Yeah.
That, you know, I don't know that, you know, I certainly have not done the best job of this over my career, but I think a lot of agents, this is an opportunity to define what it is that we do and articulate, you know, again, you know, if there are 100 steps in there, maybe talk about 57 of them to the customer. Because they don't need to know exactly how the sausage is made, but they do need to know about the casing, if you will.
Right.
Does that make sense to what we need to do going forward?
It does, Jim. And I think that's problem number one, okay? Is that because in part of how this business has been structured, the compensation was baked into the cake, right? We didn't have to talk about it. How many agents have I seen in UC who proclaim that my services are free, right? How are you supposed to value that which is free? Okay, you can't. And, you know, it just kind of happened. And so it's kind of like a muscle that didn't get worked. And so now that muscle is really weak and we got to strengthen it really quickly. agents didn't articulate their value. They sort of knew in their head what they did to get buyers to the finish line, but they never really communicated that effectively in the way that agents have always been trained to do on the listing side, right? You always had to talk about compensation up front. You always had to talk about the details of what you were going to do to get the best price for the home. On the buy side, we just weren't conditioned to do that. And so I would suggest one tweak to your assertion, Jim, and that is, I'm not sure I would lead with, let's say, the 100 things that a good buyer agent does. I would focus on the three big things, right? And so we've done a lot of research with consumers, recent buyers and aspiring buyers over the last few months. And like the number one thing that we have identified as like the foundational piece of value is risk mitigation. This is a big, scary thing. Because of the way the market is in most places, I'm probably really stretching myself to buy this house. I can't screw this up. I can't afford to screw it up. I don't want to screw this up. I want to be successful. And so a good buyer agent, just by virtue of the accumulated knowledge, being able to understand what's in a disclosure report and to read between the lines, understanding inspections, understanding local ordinances, like that's the core emotional benefit that a good buyer agent delivers. Mm-hmm. I'm going to mitigate your risk. This is big and scary and high stakes, and I'm going to help you get it right.
And I would add to that that, given that, now I'll let someone else jump in, because I could unfortunately or fortunately talk about this aspect all day long. I think that a lot of what we do from when we started the conversation, I wrote down three things: humanity, authenticity, and empathy. Just sort of focus of what we do. But a lot of what we do is we validate the client's decisions that they've already made, or they've already been trending that way, and they're looking for someone with professional expertise to hear them and listen and respond with either, that's a bad idea, or y'all have made a good decision.
Right.
And I think it's going to work out for you. And I think that that's one of the things that I don't know that I was ever, I was never properly trained in that aspect of the psychological aspect of what it is that we do.
Yeah.
But I think that one of the highest and best values that a great agent can do is to listen.
Yes.
And to speak back to them and say, this is a good decision, or it's a bad one.
Or it's a bad one. Yeah. We talk about empathy a lot, but basically what that means in my mind is kind of what you said, Jim. It's if you really take the time to listen to your customer and understand them and what is motivating them and what is causing them fear or hope or all of those things, if you can recognize that emotional reality that sits within your customer or prospect, whether it's face-to-face or whether it's in your marketing, then you've made a connection. And I think part of where a lot of real estate has missed the boat historically is to not acknowledge that this thing is scary or hard. I have seen so many, particularly real estate tech companies, say, we made real estate easy. Real estate made easy. Blah, 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 blah. I will make your transaction seamless. Well, you know what? It's not easy, right? Even if it's done well, it's inherently difficult and taxing. So you're not fear-mongering, but if you acknowledge that emotional reality in your, let's say, the buyer, then you're forging a connection, right? I know this is difficult for you, and I'm going to help you navigate this challenging thing and get you to a good outcome. And I think that is a more empathetic, as you put it, approach to this. And it also opens the door to the kind of value conversation that maybe we haven't had in the past on the buy side, right? Yeah, this thing's really complicated and it's hard and there's risk involved. And here's how I'm going to help you get it right.
Yeah, you know, I think one of the exciting opportunities for me is exactly that. And kind of going back to your point a few minutes ago, and you said, you know, the agent's fee was kind of baked in already. Like your buyer's agent, you knew what you were going to get paid, and you didn't really have to go above and beyond and be creative and like and flex those muscles. Yes. And so the question is now, and this is the question that we're bouncing around, and we've been talking about it, about differentiation for years, and how do we differentiate? I mean, really since day one, how do we differentiate? And I think that's the challenge that the industry has had since I've been involved in it for 20 something years, is really the lack of differentiation from brokerage to brokerage and agent to agent. I mean, there's 100,000 brokerages and, you know, 1.5 plus million practicing, you know, in air quotes, practicing real estate agents. So, you know, is this going to be kind of an inflection point where there is true differentiation and someone can kind of tell the difference? A consumer will be able to tell the difference between the blue company, the white company, the green company, and the teal company. So, you know, I'll say that. And then also, you know, based on our email exchange, I sent you this quote. And I want to get your feedback on it. So Scott Galloway is a professor at marketing professor at NYU and has a podcast, Pivot with Kara Swisher, and pretty well known in the business community. And he made this comment on a podcast recently, kind of about brand and brand differentiation. He said, if you're advertising, your product sucks. If you are constantly having dinner with strangers, it means you are selling an undifferentiated product. So if you are in the services business and your main job is to build relationships with people, it means you're all selling the same relationships. I want to get your feedback on that, because we've always talked about real estate's a relationship business and it's just about relationships. And that's kind of how people have built their business. It's like, well, I know that person from church and I know this person, so they're, you know, quote unquote, my client.
Right.
What's your take on that quote and in the opportunity maybe that we have as an industry moving forward?
Yeah, so on that quote, I'll tell you, and Scott Galloway is a very intelligent person. I think his take on advertising is BS. I disagree with that, right? I mean, it's pretty obvious. Any of us can think, well, Apple always had the best product, right? Why does Apple advertise? Apple advertises to use emotion to magnify the advantage they have on product, right? So I don't know, Patagonia advertises, BMW, I don't buy that. I don't know why someone would say that. On the relationship thing, I think he does have a point. And I think that kind of, it does get to part of the challenge we face as an industry. And I'll tell you what I mean by that specifically. So we did a survey of consumers a couple months ago, and we asked this question, you know, how many real estate agents do you know, from your kid's school, from church, from the neighborhood, like personally, how many do you know? And the average was 6.8, right? The average American knows personally 6.8 real estate agents. Now, 70% of all home buying parties are couples, okay? So for 70% of home buying units, they know almost 14 real estate agents, right? They get to field a football team with their real estate agent friends. And I think that because it's been based on who you know, okay, and relationships, it's part of what has made us a little bit lazy, right? Because it's undifferentiated. I know you. I'm going to show up at the kid's soccer game and stand next to you and chat you up, and you know me there. And I do think that he has a point there. And I think the opportunity, let's not even call it a challenge, the opportunity here is to level up so that if you're the blue brand in town, you're not just the blue brand, and maybe people recognize your blue sign, But you're the brand that is saying something that nobody else can or will say. And that is the opportunity.
So I will say to your 6.8, I think the funny part is in my mind, I immediately wanted to say, I think the average person probably knows 14, but seven of the agents don't actually know how to tell the friends that they're in real estate. There's a whole lot more of us than people tend to think of to begin with. But
Yeah.
the other piece is that this entire opening of the doorway with compensation and with buyer broker agreements becoming the mainstream, really the opportunity that I see is for people who do have experience and do understand their value to be able to express that and to be able to garner a much better market share, a much better commission rate, if you will, sometimes than they are right now, because they're, you know, as we always talk about, the first year agent and the 20-year veteran receiving the exact same compensation on transaction doesn't always make sense. Or it doesn't, well, it's not that it doesn't always make sense, it never makes sense, right? And so I think this is that opportunity right now that those who understand what it is they've been doing for their career for the last decade to 15 to 20 years and know how to say it can really set themselves apart. And the firms who work with those people can set themselves apart. And we, you know, Jonathan and I have spent, you know, hours with Mark at 1000 Watt doing our messaging. And
Yeah.
we, every firm wants to say, we have the best people and the best technology. And, you know, it's like,
Yeah.
that's great. But you have to be able to show it in a sustainable way to be able to show that you really do have a differentiation in some manner and understand what that differentiation is.
Yeah. I think your point is right on, Keith. And you know, I would go so far to say as, and I know it's caused a lot of angst and trouble. I'm not sure that the system that we have become used to, basically of, as I said, compensation baked into the cape through the blanket offer of compensation, the MLS, I'm not sure it's done us any favors as an industry. I really don't think that it has, because it has made us lazy and it has made things too easy. And it has taken our eye off the ball. And now that that is looking like it might change significantly, a lot of the people who haven't been on top of it, who haven't exercised that muscle, are caught off balance. So, you know, I'll tell you, this is a focus group of one, right? And I'm speaking to the crowd here, but I talk to people all over the country. My wife sells real estate. She's about 50% listing, 50% buyers. She's not freaked out. She's like, she's good. She's really good at what she does. And she's like, well, I get paid, but I get paid. And whether I need to ask for it upfront or explain that it's, you know, offered in the MLS, it's like, I don't have a problem with this. I'm confident in my value. I know how to articulate it. I do a good job. Fine. The number of agents who can't do that sort of basic entry-level thing, I think we all know, is troubling. I mean, there are probably hundreds of thousands of agents who can't clear that hurdle. Again, that's an opportunity for those who can.
Yeah, it is an opportunity. And I think that the one thing that's kind of driven us crazy on our end for years is that it seems like the main point of differentiation that's been out there is, look how much I've sold, you
Yeah.
know, and differentiation by sales success.
Yes.
What does the consumer feel when they see that, when they see, you know, kind of like a really look at me, look what I've sold? Do they see it as, or I trust that person because they've been around the block, or do they see it as self-serving?
Both, I would suggest, right? So I think that that signal of success and experience tells somebody that if I go with this person who's done it a lot and that a lot of people in my area have used, then my risk is lower. But I think there's something real and useful in there. I think it does telegraph that, which is a real thing. But I also think that if that's all you've got, you're leaving a lot on the table, right? We all know the super agents who you know, maybe they have the billboard along the interstate, you know, maybe they're just the king or queen of the neighborhood. Like, success sells and there's something real there, but I think they're leaving something on the table if they're not telling a broader story.
For sure. Well, super fascinating conversation, and we really appreciate your time. We want to wrap with one final question here. So obviously podcast is Sweat the Details. Brian, tell us from your take right now in the moment where we are right now, what's that one detail that, you know, you can kind of pick aside, either an agent or a brokerage? What's the one detail that an agent or a brokerage should be really sweating right now in this moment?
I've always said that the detail that many don't pay enough attention to is how they look in the world. And I don't mean that I drive a nice car or that I dress up for a listing presentation, but it's all the other ways that I am present and viewable to people in my marketplace. And, you know, as an industry, we focused a lot on scripts. You know, we nail our listing presentation. You know, we have the nice car, we dress up. But then in all the other places, whether it's our advertising, our direct mail, our photograph, our brand identity, our website, we tend to be really sloppy. And I think that that becomes an even greater vulnerability in a time when I think it's reasonable to expect that people will expect more of us as an industry as a result of what has happened in the past few months. And that's, I think, a blind spot for the business. It's part of why 1000 Watt exists. I think, Nest, you've done a really great job at that. So props to you. But I think in general, we don't pay attention to how we present in the world.
Great. Yeah, great point. I mean, you're kind of having that full suite and paying attention to all the touch points. We use the word touch points around here, all the touch points.
Yep.
Business card or the entrance to the office or the website or, you know, your social media account. You got to pay attention to it all.
Yeah, it's like a suit of clothes, right? I mean, sure, you may have, you know, let's say your direct mail looks great and your website's crummy. Your business card looks cheesy. You know, it's like if you wore a nice sport coat and sweatpants, like you got to have the whole suit of clothes and it's got to fit together and you got to look put together because, like it or not, that telegraphs worthiness, value, all of those things that we want people to feel.
Definitely. Agreed. Well, thanks for your time. I know it's a hectic time for you too, so we appreciate you carving out time for us.
Oh,
it's great to talk and always great to see you.
A pleasure. Thank you, guys.